Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. Good evening, this is Ethan again, from the future. But this is, of course, part three of our wonderful horror podcast that we just couldn't shut up about. So in this wonderful holiday season, you know, it's like the middle of December when we're doing this. Enjoy this wonderful horror that we have, and I'm going to go feed Mansquito. Yeah, Mansquito's cool.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Hi, welcome to the Harping Monkey. What'll you have?
Hi, I'm Mick Bradley from the House of the Harping Monkey, a fantasy tavern and online community for geeks and fans of mythic media and misfit culture. I'm here to invite you to join us at the Round Table, a bi-weekly podcast that I host with Chris Miller and KJ Johnson, these two guys I found sleeping in the back alley. We talk about role-playing, speculative fiction, comic books, film and TV, and all that geeky stuff. Of course, there are a lot of great geek culture podcasts out there already covering all those subjects. So what we bring to the table is a focus on how it all relates to concepts like myth and truth and archetypes and the works of guys like Joseph Campbell. Yeah, we get all deep and philosophical sometimes.
Last week we left on kind of a high note. There's been a lot of discussion up on the forums about myth and myth is truth and truth is myth, and we pretty much lit a bonfire on
there. It would seem so. It's,
yeah, who the heck is that guy?
Apparently we know virtually nothing about him or her.
He's a a mystery shrouded in enigma wrapped in bacon.
I'm a lapsed gamer. I finally came out. Yeah, people are lapsed Catholics. I'm a lapsed gamer. I can't find a game I can believe in. We sent everyone out last week to do some homework to find what the hero's journey was in some aspect of life, pop culture, media, whatever.
All right. Well, for mine, I wanted to choose something that kind of showed my, let's call it, emotional maturity. So I picked the SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Right. Well, I chose the musical. The story of it is actually based on an actual Greek myth. I'm going to do the Rocky Horror Show. You might not have realized it was based on an actual Greek myth, but it was.
So if you want to listen to some geeks who know barely enough about all this monomyth stuff to get away with talking about it, come visit our tavern at harpingmonkey.com and grab the feed for the round table and give us an hour of your time. Visit the Harping Monkey Tavern at harpingmonkey.com and treat yourself to some time at the round table. You can also find us on iTunes and most other podcast collectives. We're even a part of the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, the Gaming Podcast Network, and the Goblin Broadcast Network. How spiffy is that?
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Part three of our horror podcast. Will it ever end?
No. We're on repeat.
We're on repeat? Did
yeah.
I think you might have damaged something when you destroyed the time machine.
No. We're on repeat.
We're on repeat?
No. We're on repeat. We're on repeat?
Would you smack him?
Ow!
There. We're not on repeat anymore.
Good. What?
Anyway.
When we last left off,
we were delving into the wonders of horror.
Yes.
I don't remember specifically what we were talking about, but
Diablo.
No.
The spinning death. I don't know.
No. What we were touching on was that we noticed that in the last part, or the second part of the
three part,
now
the,
three part,
now three part podcast, yes,
was that we didn't touch on
survival horror,
insanity.
Insanity. And I wanted to touch on hopelessness.
Oh, and also, though, when you take away, depriving them of something, depriving them of a sense that is considered
important,
or you know, one of those things. I never thought I would ever lose that sort of thing.
So you're talking like one of the physical senses, like sight,
suddenly
sound,
you can't
smell,
etc.
Sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, whatever.
Think of how bad that would, how much that would screw you up if suddenly in the middle of combat, due to horrid sanity loss, but, you know, from some ungodly plastic being from beyond you know, the star system, suddenly you can't feel anything.
Or somebody
you can't even tell if you're holding that gun unless you look at it. Suddenly you have to take your eyes off this thing, And in that few seconds you look away, it might be its turn to attack. And guess what happens in that?
Or somebody turns off.
Well, how would you go about? I mean, it goes into what players you have, but how would you go about dictating that to players? You know,
hand them a note. You feel nothing. The gun in your hand suddenly. You're numb.
You're numb.
You're numb from head to toe,
or you can't see.
Well, that can't be fair.
Yeah.
Or you, well, smelling isn't. I mean, that's important, obviously, but not the seeing and the feeling and the hearing is incredibly important.
What's also great is when someone goes horribly insane in the game and you twist what they're seeing. So suddenly, that person that was across the room from them is suddenly a soul sucking monster from from the basement of the house and is bent on killing them.
Heard a good interview with, or heard a good anecdote or story from Sandy Peterson, guy who wrote Call of Cthulhu, original Call of Cthulhu. And he was talking about something he did in his game where lightning flash would reveal the true form of someone.
Uh-huh.
And he said he had, the players were all gathering up the townspeople to go lynch this guy who was doing this monster thing, and they were heading on up, and, it's like they had their torches, their pitchforks, and it's like, and a storm's brewing up. And they're like, yes, of course a storm's brewing up. Okay. And then he passes a note to one of the players. It's like he has them all roll their perceptions. And it's like, our lightning flashes, and you see, all right, this is what you see. All of the village people, when the lightning flashes, they don't look, they're not human.
Oh, goody.
And so he flips these notes to all the players, let them know that, so they know themselves, But then he says, at that point, the whole atmosphere changes. It's like, oh crap, we're stuck. We can't just run away from this. We're leading the mob,
You're stuck between Scylla and Charybdis.
Right. Not pretty.
No, not pretty.
But that is an interesting way to do it, of using sight and using that, but...
That was one of the things that was brought up in the Keeper's Companion that I just got, was that passing notes is really good. Even if it's just something mundane, that is an everyday, ordinary thing, you pass a note, and a lot of players, without even thinking about it, will attribute something sinister to it. Like, the mud here has a strange odor. Some of them will go, why does it have a strange odor? Is everybody buried underneath the mud? What's in the mud? Why does the mud smell strange? I have to know!
Right, and even the other players around the table who aren't getting the note will also think, okay, what's going on? Why is he getting a note? It's like, what's going on here?
This is where a table comes in really handy, which is sadly something I am missing from my house.
Yeah, I don't have a table either.
Depriving sense of smell or sense of touch, sense of sight, hearing, anything like that. That becomes a challenge for role players and a challenge for the game master in that.
How do you describe or present how they lose that sense?
And as with everything I think we discuss here, all assuming you have good players, you have players that will work with you with this.
And any good player will work with you to horribly, screw with their character or any other character in the group.
Because as a GM, you have to sort of step back and think a little bit of, okay, if this character has lost his vision, how does he perceive this? What does it sound like? Is there a taste in the air?
And suddenly those senses will kick in into overdrive.
Right.
Well, sometimes it's easier just to take, sight away from the whole party.
Mm-hmm.
The party's traveling in a cave, they have their torches.
The torches go
out. Wind blows through, the torches go out. They don't have dark vision. And that's when they start hearing
sounds.
Sounds a lot clearer.
Mm-hmm.
Those footsteps off
that
in the distance, those croaking, all that noise suddenly becomes very, 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 intense. It's right there now, and they can't tell exactly, because you take away somebody's vision, you can't quite tell.
Because anytime you've ever had the power go out at your apartment, or anything like that, and you have, like I had the power go out here a couple days back. I had, my flashlight was in my bedroom. And it's very awkward, very harrowing experience to go just 30 feet into your bedroom to find something. You know exactly where it is, but you're so attuned to your vision that
your
balance is off, and you walk really slow, hands outstretched. You're like going, okay, there's the wall. Your other senses do go in overdrive. You're right.
Sight is not, I don't think, a big problem. Hearing is a little bit more of a problem because you have a tendency.
Hearing's more of a problem than people would think it is.
Yeah, because you have players who sometimes will sit there and they'll be planning what their characters will do, but they're also planning with the other players what their characters will do, while the characters are sitting there getting ready to be attacked
because,
by something.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a modern-day style setting, and even when you go outside, even in a fantasy setting, is you've always got this ambient noise that you hear. Whether it's, you know, crickets and cicadas out in the wild, or if it's, you know, the sound of traffic going by or something, or the hum of a motor. If you cut everything out,
it's hard to
very show strange what that means. And it's very alienating.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes what you need to do is just explain to your players, this person's deaf.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk to them, you can talk to them, just try not to make any noise.
Be like,
Just mouth it. Just to help the player, you know, continue playing. But it's really hard. That one's really hard, actually.
Mm-hmm. But it is one to lose.
Yeah. Not to mention, your voice, I mean, when you're speaking and you can't hear your voice, that causes problems, too.
Yeah, because you don't know how you're speaking.
Spell casting should be affected somewhat.
Oh, yes.
Because you don't know the proper tones and things like that. Sight for spell casting isn't as big of a deal, except for targeting. saying the spell, moving your hands. Most spellcasters know where on their body their spell components are.
Right.
Unless they're new at it and they mix. Instead of mixing the one ingredient with the other, they mix
the guano with the chewing gum
and bowl them up. But sometimes you have to force the player into saying, you know, you can cast your fireball. You just can't see where the guy is.
Right.
So are you willing to...
And trying to locate something by sound is very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, with sound echoes. And even in a small space, it's going to echo. You're not going to know precisely where it is. And you can guess, but that is something you'd want to work into.
Spatial distortion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I don't think I pronounced that word right.
Unless you're a human bat, you're not going to know specifically where something is by sound.
I think it's spatial.
Spatial distortion.
Yeah, right. Distortion.
And I would grant, though, if you're playing a character that has been blind or has always been blind, that his hearing is going to be a lot better.
Yeah, it's going to be more acute.
And remember, you have to force the penalties on players.
Mm-hmm.
There's penalties for being deaf in-game.
Well, you have your five senses. If you take one away, it's like chopping off an arm.
Yeah.
It's like severing a very vital limb that person needs to function. You don't really realize it because they work so well together. But when one of those is gone, you will notice it.
And what also can make it more horrifying is when it's not an easy thing to get it back.
Right.
If you're in a if you're in a world of high magic where healing is a big thing, but somebody eats your arm and you're in a low-level adventuring party, a heal spell is not going to bring your arm back.
Yeah.
If your eyeballs get ripped out of your head by a lich, you're not going to grow your eyes back.
How I wish it did that for real to the player. But that's a side note, anyway.
But it's even worse in a low magic. If you get your arm eaten off by zombies, you may never get it back. That's horrifying. If you lose your sight, and there is not cure blindness, that's horrifying. You're not going to get that back.
I actually liked it. That's one thing I liked about 2nd edition D&D was they had the two different spells for that. Your heal spell would just heal the wound. It wouldn't regrow your arm. But you had to get the regeneration to regenerate it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And the third edition, they got rid of that.
They kind of...
And I never really liked that
a little
bit,
which is true. But, at the same time, it's going to take a much higher level... Regrowing a finger, okay, I can see. Lower level healing magic, fine. But if your arm gets lobbed off...
Well, it's even with fingers, is I think, what is it? Basically, your first knuckle on all your fingers will regenerate.
Yeah.
It's one of the only parts of the body that will.
But...
I don't want to test that.
No, put your hand
out. Come on.
Yeah.
No.
We'll feed it to Mansquito.
Yeah. I've been feeding him the neighbors.
We have neighbors?
Well, we did. They were zombies, so it's okay.
He eats zombies? I thought Mansquito drank blood. Do zombies have blood?
He's been eating them.
Alrighty then.
Are you sure they're zombies?
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
Note to self, do not drink.
Which wall do we need to knock over? Because we can just take over that space now. Anyway, the But, yeah, senses. Anything else you guys want to add on senses?
No, not on senses. Not that I can think of.
Well, and also, again, on taking away senses, if you do want to get around the magic being, you know, simply to fix it, make it a curse. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to get rid of it when it's a curse.
Right, right. Make it also sort of depends on what type of campaign you're running.
Exactly.
It's high magic
make it
magic.
A curse, even in high magic, make it a curse that removes curse.
Remove curse.
But you have to have something else.
You have to
it.
Do something special to
exactly.
do it. Yeah, it's like where you're the cleric in your party can cast Cure Blindness and Cure Thing, but it's not going to fix it.
Yeah.
You have to go do something special to do it, or you have to go to a specific church to have it done, or do a specific need.
Ability damage works that way too. That's a great
that
way.
Disease.
You're taking disease. Yes, disease is another way to take away something where it's and it's contagious as disease it should be. It just
right.
keeps spreading, and after a while, you're like, I've just killed that whole village.
Right.
And I am the plague bearer!
Like in your game, with me getting that contagion thing, which was great, by the way. I gotta give you props on that.
That was hilarious.
The damage to my character was so minute. If we hadn't gone into that grove and gotten all healed and stuff, I could have seen me just... I could have... my character would have just said, well, I'm not... I'm just the carrier. I'm not sick. So, I mean, because I only lost 1 point of strength, because everything else, you know, nothing was happening. Everyone was getting screwed over.
And there was a third one, too.
Right, I know.
That didn't hit.
I know. But it's like, okay, that's why I never cast anything on me, because I figure, oh, well, I'm not hurt.
And disease is one of those horrifying things. You throw that into, and you can make the disease as bad as you want. You can make the disease as, it's a wasting disease that when you die, you be animated as an undead, so you add to the horror. Your loved ones are getting up.
The Book of Vile Darkness has a bunch of really nice diseases for D&D. Even outside of D&D, is if you want to put diseases into the game, disease is a great bad guy or a great entity to fight because it is there, it's physically there, but you can't just stab it with a sword, you can't shoot it with a gun.
Study some real diseases, like look on the internet.
Well, just look in the history. The Black Plague.
Ebola
is terrible stuff.
I mean, if you threw that into a modern terrorist with Ebola in a modern setting. Mm-hmm.
The thing about diseases you gotta understand, though, is it's so resilient, like a retrovirus that changes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Retrovirus that changed it. And I think that it would be interesting to adapt that to a fantasy setting with magic, where you have, all right, the heal spell works, but then it doesn't work. You know, what do you have to do to keep combating
only
disease?
Helps,
you know?
A little bit.
Because I mean,
one step ahead of what's causing the problem.
Right, because it would make sense that it would evolve.
And then you could take the disease one step farther. Remember, there's the diseases that cause you to turn into something else.
Right, like 28 days later.
Yeah.
Where you have
turn into a zombie.
You turn into
a
zombie thing.
Turn into a whatever you're going to turn into.
Mm-hmm. Then you kill your girlfriend with a shovel.
Instead of
shooting them with the rifle you have, but
that
you know,
you're saving
Kevin
for yourself.
Fever, what can
you're
I
a
say?
Coward.
Yeah.
Cut them in half, blow them away. Cut them in half, blow them away.
I'll think of one more. I love you. I'll beat you to death with a shovel.
I think my favorite line I've ever heard for a horror game, though, I have to say this, and you can find this online if you look around. It's survival tactics for horror survival games. It's curiosity did not kill the cat. Some unspeakable horror did. Not only did it kill the cat, but it turned the cat inside out, made tentacles grow from every orifice imaginable, grew to ten times its original size, reanimated it, and gave it a thirst for human blood. Now the cat is coming for you.
Right.
Yeah.
With using disease in a horror game, though, would be an interesting thing to try out, because you got to think also, if you can do it right, you can instill that paranoia into your players of who's infected.
Who's the carrier?
Watch a movie like, 28 Days Later, but also look at something like John Carpenter's
The Thing.
You know, it's like, well, who do you trust? In D&D, you could use a doppelganger for it. You could use a disease for it.
Or even as simply as the carrier is not a villain in the sense of they are unknowingly spreading it. So they are a villain because there is evil.
Right.
But they are not a villain that you can just walk up and defeat because they're
me.
An innocent person.
Mm-hmm.
I read a book once. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about a horrible plague that was sweeping through and killing all these people. And when they eventually found the carriers, it turned out to be two young children.
Right.
How do you deal with the carriers of this disease? I mean, do you honestly go out and just slaughter these two children to save millions.
That's also going on
what?
going on that reign of not knowing that you're spreading this disease or not knowing that you're the villain is say you have you're playing in a game, and then you spring them on one thing, like I don't know if people watch Battlestar Galactica or something. You know, it's like okay, you're all adventuring along, and then in the plot line something happens and you discover it's like, oh, there are these entities out there that are taking human form. We've developed a way to test for it. You know, it's
and
how let's test. And yeah, one of the players turns out to be one. You just say, okay, well, we test everybody. All right, well, you actually tested positive. And that player now has to go, what?
And at this point, are they really that creature? Are they not?
Right,
is
exactly.
There a mistake?
Is it a false positive?
Or no, is it a false positive? You know, it's like, how do you test it?
Though, then we go into things like, I love the one where you have a player, you know, they wake up in the room and they notice that under their fingernail there's blood. And they don't know why. They don't remember the night before. And it could be as simple as a werewolf. Or it could be something worse. Maybe there's a serial killer possessing their body at night.
Right, right.
Or maybe they get on board a ship and they suddenly turn into some, like, anthropomorphic, whatever they were at that point.
I think if you do something like that, it's best to keep those players in the dark just so they can, they can, you know, show off that, well, I don't know what's going on,
and,
you know, where am I at?
Don't have
them
attack players, obviously. Have them attack NPCs.
Yeah, like, especially a ship is a great thing to do it on, or a train, or some, you know, I think that isolation really works well. I think we said that before in the previous part, but, like, on a ship, is you have nowhere to go. Even in a magic campaign, if of course, you know, limiting with teleportation and things like that, but...
But if you teleport away from that ship, teleporting back is going to be a... bastard.
Yeah.
Because a moving target.
Because it's a moving target, right. But the you have that isolation built into it of well, you know, what do we do now? How do we get away? Well, I can't get away from it. We have to deal with this. Which I think should segue somewhat into survival horror.
Yeah.
Survival horror, I think, is something you could use in any genre.
I mean,
you could run it up. Alien uses it in you know... Aliens
in droves,
you know, in droves.
Dawn of the Dead.
Any of the
Shaun
zombie
of the
movie.
Dead.
Shaun of the Dead. Great film.
Yes.
And even in an old school, it would be. No one's actually done it media wise, but in Dungeons and Dragons or any of the fantasy style settings, it can be done. But the challenge for survival horror is to instill that sort of sense of hopelessness, that sense of what do we do now? Where do we go? You know, I mean, well, we're holed up in this subway station. What's the goal? If you're doing a survival horror game, I think it'd probably be prudent to have the characters get a goal. Like, they have to get somewhere to get something done or to get somewhere where they think it's safe. That's a common theme in a lot of survival horror movies. Where it's like, oh, we have to get out of the mall because we're going to go get to a boat and get to an island, and we'll be safe there, theoretically.
There was a very interesting book, and we may have to look up try to find it. I can't remember the name of the book. But basically, the world had turned into vampires. There was one person left, and at night, he went into this basically a hole. It was a house, but he had blocked off all the entrances. And we're not talking about just, like, human vampires. Everything was vampiric. This is just vampiric plague. And it was survival in that sense, because during the night, he hid as these things tried to get to the last living entity. During the day, he'd go out and get supplies and try to kill as many of these things. Not just human, but, like, he had to kill the squirrels and the birds and things like that. And then guess what? At night, he has to go back as they scrape and scrape and scrape. And there's no hope because he's the last person alive. And all he can do is get supplies and kill as many of them as possible.
Until he succumbs.
Until he either turns into them or... And he doesn't know if there... Maybe there is other people. But to the best of his knowledge, he has no radio, he has no TV, nothing. It's just him and his house...
It brings in that isolation. Is if you're going to do a survival horror thing, I think one of the best things to do is cut the person off. Well, it's like, yeah, you have a cell phone, but can you reach anybody with it? What happens if, you know, the zombies kill everyone in the cell phone at the cell phone place?
Or the zombie answers the cell phone.
Or a zombie answers the phone, you know. How are people going to get to you, you know? I mean, who says that this is an isolated incident? You know, you call back up to... Call back up to the main city. It's like, oh, we got our own problem. So, you know, I mean, I could see the zombies tearing down cell towers, you know.
If they were
or if there's no electricity, your battery just runs out.
Right.
You don't know.
Yeah, how do you charge your phone?
You can't charge any of your
I think that's one thing you have to take into account in, like, a post-apocalyptic or a setting like that is...
And also,
how much that people would rely on modern conveniences.
And the simple goal...
Take that stuff away.
Simple goal could be even just... Getting to from point A to point B. At point B are more bullets, food, water, just basic survival thing. It's not that it's necessarily any safer, but you have to go to that point because you are.
It's like, hey, we're stuck here, but supplies are going to run out, and we need to get out of here and get somewhere where there are more supplies.
As awful as it was, Land of the Dead covered on that, like with the fact that they were raiding the outlying areas around the city because they couldn't produce their own supplies in the city. They had no supplies. That movie was grotesque.
It was fun up until the very end. Up until the very end, you just wanted to...
trying to find their own home.
No, blow them away!
You just wanted to punch the hero and just say, launch the missiles.
Yeah, the end was horrible. But the rest of the movie, I was like, this
is pretty
funny.
It's a fun movie, yeah. But, yeah, you're right.
Pulling the guy's intestines out of his mouth? No.
Well, that was a little bit over.
That's George Romero being George Romero.
They should have blown him up
with a budget.
Yeah, they should have blown him up at the end. But with looking into the zombie movies, you know, I mean, zombie genre, that cut off, that isolation, and that again, that systematically, if you're depending on what system you're using, it's hard as a GM to run. It's like, okay, you have a legion of countless zombies here, and I think D&D doesn't use zombies well at all, because zombies should be terrifying. Zombie should be not something that's like, oh, it's a zombie, it's a CR1/2, I'll just chop through it, I'll be fine. But zombie should just be relentless, I say. I like the way if you have a zombie, I cut him in half. Well, okay. He's still crawling towards you and his lower half is kicking you now.
You could add the horde template too, the horde template.
Is that in the...
Not the horde template, but what am I thinking?
The mob template?
No. Swarm template.
The mob template is the swarm template
basically,
for that.
Just add that to zombies and then make them like fast healing or something. There's so many things you can do.
Well, I think it goes into customizing your monsters to fit the game you're trying to run. Don't just use them straight out of any book.
I had one GM who used exploding zombies. That was great. They were easy to kill until you realized they were going to explode.
Yeah.
So you hit them.
I think that's a great thing using... Killed
someone, didn't it?
I think it's a great idea to use something like that just to make the monsters more interesting and make them off the wall.
Yeah.
And even, you know, shake it up a bit, too, you know.
Same with skeletons.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do some cool things. Every time you chop them and defeat them, all their little rib bones grow into multiple skeletons.
Yeah, and they just keep getting more and more and more. Right,
yeah.
Right. It's definitely something that's underused in a survival horror setting.
If you take away holy magic in a lot of settings, that will make undead even scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a modern setting, let's say no magic, low magic, or no holy magic setting, you can be screwed. I mean, you really can. Those zombies and those simple skeletons are very, very... They're a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just even adding the simple... Like skeletons. If you add the simple, half damage from everything but blunt...
Right.
You know, just add something like that to the zombies, or the fast, or anything like that.
Increase their speed.
Well, I think with...
Increase their speed.
Really quick, on survival horror, it is a common theme of getting from one place to another. One thing you'd want to take into account doing survival horror is the aftermath. Is one, if it's an ongoing campaign, don't just do it, you know, just don't go half-hearted in it. To go all the way, you know, I mean, if you're going to run a one-shot, that's one thing, but if you're going to try to run it as a campaign, don't sit down and go, okay, well, there's going to be a happy ending at this, because many zombie movies do not have happy endings. Pretty much everyone dies at the end. It's that you want to give them enough hope to go on, but sometimes there is that overall hopelessness of, well, we can't get beyond this. But you don't want to lay that on too thick to where they're going to, I just eat my gun. Or, you know, I fall on my sword. Hopelessness in a game, though. That it's a touchy thing to use because some players will have a hard time putting themselves in the shoes of their characters and thinking, okay, well, this is how he would think, or, you know, I'm obviously, it's like you're sitting around a table, you're not in any danger of being eaten by a big tentacle monster, at least I hope you're not.
Well.
But if you have, if the character would have that overriding fear, even in a fantasy campaign, even in a setting where you will run into these monsters all the time, you're going to have fear.
As long as the hopelessness isn't so overwhelming that there's no point to the game.
Right.
Because the game can end, there are no happy endings. No matter what we say, there are no true happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
There are fairy tale endings, but there's no happy ending, really.
Because even though it might be happy for some people,
it's
going to be
unhappy
for
someone else.
Right.
But the thing is, you still have to have your small victories. And if it's completely hopeless, there's not even small victories. You can tell your players at the beginning, if you want, that this is not going to have a happy ending.
Right.
I'm sorry, guys. This is just... You may not want to do that, though.
I think with the hopelessness, you do have to make sure you're running it... that the players do understand, but you don't want to come out and go, okay, well, you guys are all going to die, or, you mean, no matter what you do, you're screwed. I think that is a good point to make with the small victories, though, is you want to, it's the throw them a bone now and again, you know?
Because if there's no victory, then really...
If they keep getting beat down, they're going to give up. But if you beat them down, there is light at the end of this tunnel. You know, it's like, oh, the world, zombies are everywhere, the world might be over, but... If you get to this one place, you might be able to survive. You might be able to wait this out. You might be able to find more people to help you.
And also, just because when we're talking about an unhappy ending, it's not necessarily for the heroes.
Right.
Because if the heroes achieve their goal, and like you said, survive or retire happily or whatever, mm-hmm. that's fine. But then there are some people want to know about the after story.
Right.
And you're like, well, you stopped this demon from entering the world.
But
he's still there.
Right.
And his cult will do this again.
Right.
As you said.
You know, it's like where this epic battle really wasn't that epic in the grand scheme of things, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly was epic for you, though.
It was epic for you, and you've won your battle. For your
However,
life.
You know, it's like, but there's always it's the teaser at the end of the movie saying, oh, there could be a sequel, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I mean when you say there guys, there probably won't be a happy ending to this. Not that there won't be a happy ending per se for the players,
mm-hmm.
but the campaign world still is going to continue.
Right.
Just because
the campaign's over doesn't mean that the story itself is.
I did have one GM who told us that basically this is a cyberpunk that basically even if we went into the building. We weren't coming out at all. There was no point. We could not escape.
Yeah,
we'd be locked down, and he just went on and on and on, and finally just became the GM just ranting, and we just left. We're like, what are you talking about?
Did we actually manage to get out of that building?
We all got blown up.
We all died at the end after we escaped, though, didn't we?
Yeah, but then the helicopter showed up and machine gunned us.
Oh, that's right. That was the GM being a dumbass going, I don't want my players to win. I want it to be fatalistic. And what was that? We never, ever ran in a game with him ever again.
Not Cyberpunk.
No.
But either way, that was hopeless.
Right.
It wasn't horror hopeless.
If you want to put take away hope, don't make it completely hopeless is what we're saying. Yeah. Puts a light at the end of the tunnel. Something in there that's at least going to keep them going.
Not to mention if it is hopeless, but then they actually... Like, let's say you give someone a disease that there is no cure.
Right.
And for the basically 90% of the game, they're just wasting away. They're still continuing.
Right.
They're just wasting away. But finally, that last 10%, guess what? They actually find a way to cure themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This disease is not supposed to have any... That suddenly... Brings. I mean, that's great. That makes it even better.
Right. It's that sweet ending.
Exactly.
I got something there.
Yeah, you've got something major.
It's that emotional involvement that I was talking about.
I personally will not play in a game where I know that there is no hope. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's small victories...
On the flip side of that, you also have, you know, it's where I have the problem is of, oh, well, I'm not going to kill your character. Where if you play in a survival game, well, they don't have to worry about it because I go, I'm not going to die. So I don't care. So I'll be fine.
In a survival game, though,
you gotta kill them.
You gotta kill them.
If they do something, yeah.
Which we'll go into.
Do your best to kill
them. We'll go into the characters.
Don't kill the players, because won't have any.
Then you'll go to prison.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Damn it! I always get those two confused.
Yeah, I know. That's why your last Cthulhu game ended. Remember, prison sentence, electric chair.
Don't remember the electric chair.
How are you called? You're a ghost.
No. I used the time machine to go back and get it.
I broke that time machine.
This is before you broke it.
Oh. So, you guys up for a game of Call of Cthulhu?
No!
But we are going to summon a demon later.
Sweet.
Azathoth?
No.
Make sure that that pentagram there is in complete...
But his name is Larry. We're not using pentagram.
Okay. That's fine.
You're going to threaten to put him in a small bird cage?
Yes. Like we did last time.
Still didn't get us our goal.
That's okay, though.
But what else do we have to talk about
here? Sanity, or the lack thereof.
Ah, yes, insanity. Often attributed to Call of Cthulhu, I suppose, but insanity is something you can use anywhere.
Yeah. Yes. Basically, the premise of insanity, or the loss of sanity, is seeing something that so totally and horribly changes or perverts your view of the world or your perception of how things are, that it actually breaks a small piece of your mind.
I would recommend, if you're going to do something with insanity and you want to do something relatively serious with it, is check out some Call of Cthulhu material. Also check out a game, Asylum, by Clockworks Games. It actually does a good job of telling you, there's a good essay in there about insanity and how it affects the mind, and there's some good ideas in there about playing an insane character, because that's pretty much what that game is.
And if you want not as serious insanity,
Paranoid.
Evil Dead.
Oh, Evil Dead.
1 and 2.
Right.
He's insane in that. Actually, for that matter,
Army
of Darkness, he's insane.
Well, yes.
Evil Dead 2 is a good synopsis on watching the deconstruction of someone's mind, because he does not start off that movie being completely insane.
Right.
He slowly loses everything.
But, right. Yeah.
Well, the... with insanity, one thing Asylum did present is dissociative identity disorder. If you've seen the movie Identity, is where you can have a player who's playing two different characters, but they're the same character.
Mm-hmm.
Insanity is, I mean, if you think about, we talked about altering your senses or taking away sight, sound, you know, whatever. Imagine messing with someone's mind to the point where your perception is skewed. I mean, a psychotic individual is going to look out the window and see, you know, something entirely different than a regular person or a person who is not insane.
My favorite one for that was, you know, a normal person looks out the window, sees the mailman's waving at him. A psychotic person looks out the window, sees the mailman turns to him and opens his mouth, and a huge tongue comes out and blood spurts out of his eyes. And the psychotic person closes the window and realizes that the mailman must die.
Right.
Mailman's an ordinary person.
Well, the thing is, if you're looking into the psychosis, is behavior for a psychotic is entirely logical. It's like, that mailman had blood coming out of his eyes, and I had to kill him, of course. Well, duh.
He had a forked tongue. He was a demon.
Exactly.
He showed me his true colors.
But insanity is something you have to understand. It alters your perception to the point that you're not perceiving reality as everyone else is. Even if it's a manic, a depressive, bipolar, any of that stuff.
Paranoid schizophrenic
is you're looking at things differently. You're going to perceive things differently. With a paranoid schizophrenic is you hear voices all the time. Now, us sane folk, you know, we'll sit here and go, well, that would suck, but really think about it. That would really suck.
And also,
you're sitting there alone, mm-hmm. and you are clearly hearing. It's not like whispering voices are like sounds of people muffled out in the other room that walk by your door. No, it's an actual, very comprehending voice that you hear talking to you like I am right now.
And add to that in a world of magic.
Yeah, what kind of things would that, those voices
might be
say?
Real.
Right.
But that doesn't mean anybody believes you.
Right.
And not to mention, you still may go insane because of the real voices.
Right.
Or if you see ghosts everywhere, there's only really two options. You either accept it or you go nuts. Mm-hmm. There's no, you can't just ignore it. That doesn't really work. At some point, you either accept it or you go nuts.
Right.
As they showed in, like, in Sixth Sense, the kid who didn't accept it, you know, at the beginning of the story, ends up killing himself after mm-hmm. shooting, you know, Bruce Willis's character. But the boy ends up making the best of it.
Right, of working
and
is living with it.
And accepts it and deals with it.
This is why I think in Call of Cthulhu, one thing I think a lot of people make a mistake of is if your character goes down to zero sanity, they say, a lot of GMs will just take your character away and say, oh, well, that's
no, fine. No.
It's like, no. If you have the right players and if they understand how to do it, is you could still play that character. You're just insane.
Yeah. The way they say to do it is let your characters continue to play the character with zero sanity. The next time they take a sanity loss and they go into negatives, then you need to deal with the fact that by the end of that session, that person needs to probably be in an insane asylum.
It needs to be hospitalized. Right. We're to the point of, you know, being insane doesn't mean a lot of players will jump to this and say, oh, well, I'm insane. I'm just going to kill the guy standing next to me. And that's not what insanity is. Insanity takes a lot of forms.
Yeah.
And it could be try to work with the player on, it's like, what made them go insane?
My favorite one was someone had an actual fear of bats, mm-hmm. and their character went indefinitely insane. And they had rolled a lot of their own fears and feelings of themselves into the character. And so I passed them a note and said, as your vision reels from seeing this horrid thing, you glance to the ceiling and notice there's bats everywhere. And there were no bats, but they believed there were bats all over the ceiling. And they were trying to make sure everybody was quiet, because they didn't want to wake the bats, because the bats will attack them. And he was going through the whole thing about, shh, the bats.
Well, do you remember...
He played it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember in Bram Stoker's Dracula, his little helper?
Yes.
In the insane asylum? He wasn't trying to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He just ate bugs.
Yeah.
And he wanted to serve his master.
He wanted
to
What was that character's name?
I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name either. I just remember in the Bram Stoker's Dracula, he was played by Tom Waits.
He was completely insane. Well, yes, he
might Tom Waits is
people,
insane.
But...
Oh, you mean the character. Yeah. The character was insane, too.
Yeah.
But he wasn't just... He wasn't a...
Renfield.
Yes, he wasn't running around trying to knife people.
No. He was insane.
Oh, he was completely insane.
Or what, Hannibal Lecter. He's insane.
He's insane.
But he
also wanted to eat everybody.
That's insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, did he stab everybody he came into contact with? No. He was a creepy,
just people that got
creepy
in the
guy.
Way, and the people that got in the way are the people he wanted to eat.
Right, exactly.
And he wanted some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And the people he wanted faces of.
But I won't go into that movie because I've got some
issues.
That movie gave me nightmares when I saw it when I was a kid.
But insanity is something that can actually give a very interesting perspective to it.
It'd be kind of interesting to have the players be insane and the villain not.
Right.
Because usually it's the villain who's insane.
Like
Why
the
can't
villain...
the villain be quite sane?
And wanting to...
Still do something evil.
Well, it could not even necessarily evil. It's like... Play the whole campaign off as it is the character's insanity. The characters don't know they're insane. Insane people typically don't know that they're insane.
They think that the police officer that's tracking them, trying to help them and stop them, is actually the evil necromancer Gorzak,
he's
summoning demons.
Or he's under the thumb of the villain, and he's just trying to stop them from stopping his
Twilight Zone episode will play on that. It's your perception of reality, and being insane changes your perception of reality.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but the one where the people are stuck in a circular room, and they're trying the whole episode to get out, and when they finally get up to the top of the bucket, and they're getting out, and they're pulling everybody out, the camera pans out, and you realize that all they are dolls and a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy reaches down, grabs the dolls, so they look like they're about to fall out of the bucket, puts them back down in the bucket. They have no idea. Their whole perception is that they're living beings and they're trying to
escape
from this horror.
But are they insane is the question. Their perception is...
No, but their perception is different. Now, one of them does go crazy, but
No, like the classic Twilight Zone with the gremlin on the wing, you know?
Yes.
Was
there's
he,
something on the wing!
There's something on the wing. And it's like, was he insane or was he not insane?
He didn't just randomly attack people.
Well, no, he did shoot out the window and try to kill the gremlin on the wing.
The gremlin, but not random people.
Well, no, exactly.
Because
and,
he wasn't,
which goes into how you play the insanity.
Yeah,
how
it
you
also depends on the character concept, too.
Right.
If you're a barbarian-type individual who's answer to most things is violence,
right.
first you are going questions. To be violent. But if you're a more logical individual, even if you're insane,
mm-hmm.
your logic's going to be twisted, but you may come up with other ways to handle or deal with the problem at hand.
Where did he get the pistol from? I've never figured that out.
I think he got it off of someone on board the ship, on board the plane. It was, I think it was a police officer on the plane. I can't remember, honestly.
That's
going to
be like the best episode of Twilight Zone I've ever seen.
It's one of the best, yes. That's such a, it's just a great series.
I also like the one where the airplanes crash in the desert.
That's a good one. Or there's a ton we could talk about, but the one where the spaceship or the astronauts crash on what they think is an alien planet. They crash on Mars, but it's actually
Earth.
It's actually the Arizona desert. Mm-hmm. Things like that, or the one where Robert Redford plays Death.
We also should talk about the causes of insanity too, because some entities that may appear can. Well, either one, like if a god appears, if he is your god, or at least a beneficial deity, he could probably cause you to go insane, but he doesn't want to. While a demonic entity would appear and would cause you to go insane, either on purpose or not, just because of the horror itself. Or you want to go even farther, that when an entity from the outer realms appears, whether benevolent or not,
it
reality
your reality
warps, and therefore you have a chance of going insane.
Because
you know,
your perception
you want,
of,
yeah, your
of
perception
reality
of reality, and reality itself tries to fix things, and your mind can't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it just depends on the system and how you want to do it.
Right.
It's a great horror thing.
Yeah, it's that the whole perception of reality is a great way to instill fear. And instill the awkwardness into people. But I think that about wraps up the horror thing really.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to add. So, without further ado, we'll be back.
If you guys think of anything else, email us.
Email us. Yeah, let us know. ThousandMonkeysProductions
at gmail.com.
And with that being said, without further ado,
we'll be back.
We'll pause for station identification.
What a filthy job.
Could be worse.
How?
Could be raining.
Podcasting from their secret satellite headquarters.
Dude, it's your kitchen.
Three friends gather around the dais of discourse,
like at your mom's kitchen table.
Do battle boredom and bash finality.
Armed with only a fistful of comics
and game.
Okay, Night Ranger, it looks like you've angered the kobold shaman, and he's about to cast a spell at you. What do you do?
Is he wearing boots?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, it might cause arcane spell failure.
Okay, yes, he's wearing high hard leather boots.
Well, in that case, I'll attack with my longsword.
Okay, roll to hit.
13.
That's a miss.
Working man?
What is it, Tangent? Can't you see that we're playing Keep on the Borderlands?
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but we just got an urgent email from the Inker from Mutant Warrior Base on the planet Zargon, and he wants to know what our podcast is all about. What do you want me to tell him?
Well, tell him that we're a roundtable discussion with a revolving cast.
Okay, I've got that. Now what?
Well, tell him that we have topics about comics, games, and other related media, like TV, movies, and novels.
Okay, I've got that.
Well, don't forget to tell him about our comics, gaming, and sci-fi convention coverage.
Well, yeah, and our interviews with game and comic creators.
Yeah, sounds like everything he needs to get his geek on.
Well, I'll just finish up by saying that you can reach us at www.fistfulofcomics.com.
That's great. Now can we get back to our game?
Well, I want to keep you.
Okay, great. All right, so he finishes casting his spell, and he fires a magic missile at you. Take 3 points of damage.
But I have boots on.
Kneel before Zod.
But we're back with the three-part section, as usual. Today, the NPC is being handled by Jeremy. Nathan will be handling a nice review, and I'm going to be ranting on something.
Yes, with a brand new book. Something new, not something Ooh, old.
It's shiny.
Yes, it is.
Shiny. Out of packaging, what? Less than
no, not unless you want to pay for it.
Can I catch it on fire?
Only if you replace it.
Can I get... I'm going to repeat again. Thank you.
The rant. Okay, so there you are. You got your game day all set up. You know, it's your recurring game on whatever day of the week it is. You know, it's like, everyone, okay, we're starting, we're playing this Saturday. We're starting at 7 o'clock on the nose. All right. That day gets here. You're all set. You've got your game stuff ready. I mean, you've worked on it all week, hard. Then 7 o'clock rolls around and you're sitting in your apartment and nobody's there. 7:30 hits. One person shows up. So you're starting to get a little irked. 8 o'clock hits. Second person shows up, maybe the third person. You're sitting there. Finally, you call up the other players and like, oh, yeah, we'll be there in, like, by 10. When did you know that this was going to happen? Oh, all day. So you didn't call me, why? Players being late to a scheduled game. I know some would think it's a small thing, but I get really annoyed with that because you set a normal day for everyone, and you know that you're playing, you know the time that you're playing. If you're going to be more than 5 or 10 minutes late, it's just common courtesy to call. You have ready access to telephone. That's a miraculous invention that came about, you know, over 100 years ago. It's definitely something that should be used. But being late to the game, not a cool thing. I would recommend not doing that. It probably would avoid many groups from dissolving and characters being horribly mutilated beyond compare, and also getting in more than an hour and a half of game in a game night. That's about it, really.
Yeah, we can expand on that by saying players that are late and certain groups end up getting bludgeoned by the other players because the other players get pissed off that their game that they're wanting to play, that they're there for, that they are there on time for.
And I know you're going to say, it's only a game, but sometimes, you know, us GMs and whatnot put a lot of effort into the game, and we're looking forward to it that night. And when we plan to start at 7 and we don't start till 10:30, that gets us really annoyed because some of us have to get up early.
And we understand if something comes up, but then you call and say, oh, something came up. And we're like, oh, well, that's fine. Will I see you tonight?
I just don't think it's right to, 8 o'clock, 8:30 rolls around and you call them. And they're like, oh, I won't be able to make it tonight.
Why weren't you going to
okay,
tell
us? Thanks for letting me know this. We don't live in an age where we contact each other with carrier pigeon.
Or smoke signals.
We have miraculous forms of telecommunications everywhere.
Yes, telephones have gotten to the point where you can have one in your pocket that can miraculously send signals over the air without even being plugged into power.
They are tools of the devil, but they work.
And they give you brain cancer. Not really, but...
Cancer.
Devil cancer.
Devil cancer.
But that's it for my rant.
The review.
So next, I guess we will do the product review. And sitting in front of me is a nice... shiny,
it's barking,
brand new copy of the English translation and expansion of the Malleus Monstorum from Chaosium Products. What?
Can I clone it?
You have to pay
for $50 plus shipping. Yes.
And you can too out there
at www.chaosium.com.
Yes, as of right now, this book is only available online. So this if you want a copy of it, go to chaosium.com and order one. I don't know how many you have.
That is the special limited edition right now. Yes. By the time you're listening to this, they probably won't be selling them anymore. But
bummer.
The regular edition is supposed to come out in February, I think.
Yeah. Long time, and it'll be a it'll be an actual paperback book, and it'll have a different color cover. The original cover for it looks cool and all, don't get me wrong, but having a pure black cover with just a simple design with tentacles in the corners and a star, the elder sign, in the bottom part of the book.
But it's not shaped like a tree.
It's a star with a little eye with fire in it.
It's a tree.
You use that symbol and you'll be beating off the old ones with a stick. I tell you, it's a star.
Whatever, you don't know what you're talking about.
But the star, the elder sign, right underneath a very nice, it looks like linotype, Malleus Monstorum. The book is written.
It is a hardcover book.
Yes.
By the way, the limited edition is.
And it's definitely worth the $50, $49.99 plus shipping and handling. The book is actually written by Scott David Eniolowski, I apologize if I have mispronounced this name, with Sandy Peterson and Lynn Willis as additional contributors, with additional material by a whole list of people. And there's credits on page 4 and 2.
Which I'm sure you can get off of Chaosium's website.
Oh, yes. Just a little bit of information about this. I got this book Thursday and sat down and started consuming the knowledge in it. It's incredibly well written. It's laid out in a very interesting style. Actually, compared to the standard books, which just lay out the information in tablets and tables, you have this wonderful way where they took the book and they classified creatures in different sections and laid it out almost as if it's a historical reference. Kind of like those, the coffee table books. And it's filled with the artwork for it. Yes, there's a lot of artwork that's mythos complete. Like on the first major picture on page 8 is a wonderful picture of a Chthonian, and it looks like it's got someone snared and getting ready to eat them. But the artwork through the rest of the book, actually, from what I can tell, a lot of it is actual real artwork that has been mildly modified to give it reference to the actual mythos.
Or it's artwork that's presented in a fashion of like an old photograph or like ancient Mayan artwork or sculpture like a ceremonial mask that was discovered in Africa.
Yeah, and a lot of it is actual real artwork. It's just been edited.
Even some like advertising labels and stamps too.
Yeah,
it's really amazing how they do it.
Yeah, it's incredible, and the way the book is laid out, it is very easy to find everything you need.
Diego.
It's very easy to find everything you need, with great descriptions, not only just descriptions of the creatures, but it also gives you information about their habits, their attacks. Some creatures, like the gods, it even gives the standard information about the cults that follow them. So the information is laid out very well. The book weighs in at a hefty 290 pages, 295, 296 if you include the nice little advert in the back page, which weighs probably a good 3 pounds. It's all in black and white, which is standard for most of Chaosium's publishing. I don't think I've ever seen a color book from Chaosium aside from the covers. The artwork is exquisitely done. The layout of the book is absolutely perfected.
Yeah, I don't even think that big anniversary edition of the main rules is color.
No, it was black and white.
It's black and white.
Adds to the creepiness.
Yeah, it does add to it. It does give it a certain effect. But in my opinion, this was probably the best $59.43 with shipping. That's the best $59.43 I have ever paid for a book.
And for those of you who can't get the limited edition now, the regular edition comes out in February.
And I believe it's $34.95. So it's worth $34.95. If it's worth $50, it's worth $34.95.
If you want to order off of Chaosium.com, go to your friendly local game store.
Yes. That is my opinion. Jeremy and Ethan both had a chance to look at this. What are your opinions on this book?
I want one.
I'm not a big fan of Call of Cthulhu.
Heretic.
I do have to say I do like this book, and at some point I'll probably wait for the $30 one.
I will pick it up
because it has some very interesting pieces of information in it, which I could probably use. So I recommend purchasing it. It's just if you can get a hold of special edition.
Yes, even if you're not into Call of Cthulhu, it's actually would be just a great book to put on your coffee table, literally.
Yeah,
it'll be a great neighbors.
Yeah, it's a great just centerpiece or conversation piece for your table.
Because if they don't know anything about role playing games and they see this book sitting on your table, they're going to freak the hell out. They're going to go, what is that? Oh, that's just a lesser spawn of Azeroth.
It is presented.
What?
Aside from the game stats, it is presented in a very, presented like a historical book where it talks about the history of these things. And it's really cool.
It would work in any game, really.
As long as you have conversions. Yeah.
It's at least good for ideas,
that could
too.
Be demons, creatures from the far realm. It doesn't have to be just Call of Cthulhu. It could be anything. I mean, there's some very interesting, just ideas. So I do recommend it.
And Ethan, just for a small quick note at the end here, Ethan brought to my attention today when he was looking through it that he realized that the Martian Warcrafts and the Martians from War of the Worlds have stats in this book. So if you've ever wanted to throw those at your players with nice disintegration rays and everything,
play out
here's
War
your chance.
Worlds. Well, there you go. But that's Malleus Monstorum from Chaosium Press, or Chaosium Incorporated, excuse me.
Currently available online until October 31st. They may extend that
a while ago when you listened to this podcast. So,
which it might be extended due to the fact that apparently it's selling incredibly well.
Or you might be able to find it on eBay. But again, the regular edition comes out in February, so wait for it. I think this book has been coming out for a while, though. So.
3 years now we've been waiting for this. There's been a German version for a long time, and it's just finally come out in English. It was a long time coming, and I've been looking at this book, waiting patiently for this book since I started playing Call of Cthulhu with the original basic role-playing rules, and I now have it in my sweaty little hands, and it was worth every cent and every minute of the wait.
We've got character.
Well, way back when, in the distant, distant past, before written history, when the gods created their first helpers, their first entities to assist them, they created these beings they called angels. Both the gods of good and the gods of evil created these angelic entities. Some of these angels decided not to serve their masters, and the sign of their desire or refusal, depending on how you look at it, of serving the gods, whether good or evil, was that their wings were gray. The gods thought it had to do with, well, you were not serving us, so therefore you are either flawed or there's something obviously wrong. So they are gray, the gray-winged angels. And these angelic entities, the gray-winged angels, they serve themselves. And at one point, one of these particular angels, what he would do is he would actually watch groups of mortals, usually adventurers, and he'd wait until those mortals get themselves into a situation that they could not get out of, because they always do. That's what adventurers do. They do something stupid, and they can't get out of it. This particular angel would then show up and offer those adventurers a simple solution. He would assist them for a price. And sometimes the price would be something steep, a soul, not necessarily their soul, just a soul, but sometimes it'd be something that didn't make any sense. A song or an emotion, something that just to us doesn't make any sense, but for some reason was very important to this entity. And in the life and death situation, the adventuring party would gladly, in most cases, do this. If not, if the gray angel had any doubt, he would appear as a white angel and trick the party into giving them whatever it is he wanted. And then at some later time, this angel would then come back and demand his service, whatever that service was. And I've had a few adventuring parties give this angel while he was in a white winged form, saying he was from a certain deity, something, for that he would assist them. And then he came back and revealed himself and said, well, now it's time for you to pay me. It's just an interesting NPC. No particular name. They can be named anything. So, and it fits well in a horror setting, too. It really does. So.
Yeah, I remember that NPC. I sold my soul to save the whole party from being blown up in that tower.
Yeah, you did.
He came back and claimed it.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
That was the end of that character.
And sometimes that happens.
Yeah, I hate him that happens.
But I saved, but the thing was, at that point in time, I was the good guy because I saved the whole party.
So while the one particular adventure was not necessarily damned per se.
I was never really damned. He just took my soul in payment. I guess it became a servitor.
He was a hero. And what did these gray-winged angels do? No one knows. What do they do with the rewards they get? No one knows. So
I think they have a little room. They store them all in their little boxes.
Probably.
Little soul. My guy's soul was sitting in a box somewhere going,
let me out.
Can I come out now? I'd really like to be reborn.
No.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me, and I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
It's the PAX. The G23 Paxilon Hydrochloride.
It went out on a broad wave, sir. Everyone who wants it has it.
You need to control this damage. Start a discrediting campaign to deal with these.
Sir, we feel you should know. There are other projects.
Get ready.
I would like to introduce myself. I am Gerald, your hostage.
To live at the edge.
What do you mean he's dead?
Just because I ain't a nice person, sugar, doesn't mean we can't deal.
This attack wasn't random. It was selected.
Surviving in the verse has never been harder.
You'll make a fine Alliance officer someday.
For a brown coat like you. After Serenity, the ongoing campaign. The story has a new season.
What do you mean he's dead? Hey, what do you guys mean? Is he dead?
Is he dead?
He's dead, isn't he? What do you mean by that?
AfterSerenity.com.
Invention, my dear friends, is 93% perspiration, 6% electricity, 4% evaporation, and 2% butterscotch ripple.
Me again. Not a lot of feedback and random encounters this week, holidays and all, I'm assuming. We got some interesting, you know, words going on, some kind words from the hosts of Fear the Boot. We'll put a link to them in our notes. We definitely appreciate their fighting for us and they're saying the good words about us. It's very nice of them. And as far as we have had a few people talk to us about our audio. Now, if you notice, with this podcast, I upped the bitrate a bit. We are working on getting some new mics and a mixing board, but the financial situation sort of comes into play there. And we live in Kansas, we po. So we're working on getting some money together and possibly upping that quality as best we can. The other thing is, Jeremy, of course, is still looking for ideas for his planner travel device for a future podcast. Please go ahead and send us that information. We are now listed, I believe I mentioned it in the last show, on Podcast Pickle. So go to the Podcast Pickle and put us in your favorites, if you wouldn't mind. We're working on getting on GBNCom. The Gaming Broadcast Network. I'm working on that. And also on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network or Podcast Pen. We're working on getting in there, too. If there's anything else out there you guys think we should try to get into, please let us know. And if you're another podcaster, send us your promo. You know, I'm running low on some stuff. I hate repeating, but I'm about going to have to start repeating on stuff. So send us a promo if you want us to play it. We're more than happy to, and we'll send you ours. We're working on a new promo. And that should be good to go in a week or two, depending on obviously the holidays. But I apologize for the lateness on this show, but I got started a new job and that and also had finals, so that sort of impacted on my ability to get this thing edited together. But now that Nathan, Jeremy, and I all have Monday through Friday schedules again, we should actually be able to do this a bit more coherently. And with the holidays coming up, but we do plan on putting out shows through the holidays. We have a bit of a backlog on some episodes. Like, if you listen to this one, obviously, this was recorded back in October, very end. So That's definitely something that we have a couple episodes lined up for. But we have a definite, we're not going to be recording anything for a couple weeks as far as the holidays. And we're going to get some stuff together as far as some interesting little doodads. But keep listening. And again, if you have anything you want to say to us, please give us a call and contact us. Here's that information. You can visit us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com or alternately at canadiancrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production. Now there's just one rule, and it's go eye for an eye. And if you slow on the door,
we have taken your request under advisement, and it has been denied.
Right. But it really helps.
That's because you're a freak.
Well, I wanted to start gladiatorial combat using prisoners, but my moral compass has informed me that I can't do that.
Why?
Oh, I know. Isn't that moral compass annoying sometimes?
Why do you guys even listen to it? I just went into the services and disabled my moral compass. I can do
it. He's marrying his moral compass.
Yeah, my moral compass is Robin.
His moral compass is a fiery ball of white-hot terror.
But you have the coffee table. Well,
on a side note, I did discover that my dachshund is a mutant.
How's that?
He's been having trouble with one of his eyes.
Uh-huh.
In his other eye, he's going blind, and now he's having trouble with the other eye.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out that he has a rare syndrome where he has a third eyelid that actually will blink on the lower half of his eye. Doesn't hurt him, doesn't cause him any pain. It just causes him some problems, you know, seeing sometimes. But it's like, dude, my dog is a mutant.
Are you sure he's not turning into a lizard?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Satan's Game.
Satan lives in my face now. I poke him with a stick.
He really hates that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
I think that the Prince of Darkness could probably, like, get out of your basement.
Because
And you also want to make sure, I think it runs into... Shut up, beast.
Or you can Skype one into me. That sounds dirty.
Skype.
Hey, baby.
Hey, baby, you want to Skype me?
Uh-huh. Mm. Do you play all the time you're over there?
Mm-hmm. It, watching a movie I've seen like 50 million times.
Nathan.
What else am I supposed
no
to do?
No cookie.
World of Warcraft, World of Warcrack. Can I say?
No.
I will not fall into that trap. It will not happen.
We'll give you a free 10-day trial.
No,